good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense on this Tuesday. It is the first day of November. 1 week to go until Election Day. So pick your milestone. The fact that it's a week till Election Day, the fact that it's November already, and the fact that it feels more like September. It's going to be gorgeous for a couple of more days here. A little chilly here in the morning, so you got to make sure the kids are still properly attired for the bus stop, but they won't be wearing those jackets when they get off later today. It's going to be in the 60s again. Some places are going to tickle 70, as you just heard. It's going to be a nice one. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Aaron Zomers is here in the producer chair. Coming up this morning, Wisconsin farmers have had some great conditions recently for harvesting crops, but there are still plenty of other things out there to concern anybody who works the land or produces for the ag industry, including a severe avian flu outbreak around the country that has proven to be devastating for turkeys and chickens and others, and that could conceivably mean your Thanksgiving dinner will be affected. That's one of the topics we'll bring up when we talk to Hans Breitenmoser, a farmer from Lincoln County, who joins us from time to time to talk about rural and economic issues. We also have an interview with our friend Dr. Kristen Lyerly, an OBGYN. Obviously, we've had a lot to say about the Dobbs decision and women's reproductive health rights. But in this case, it's something a little different. It's a new report on maternal mortality. I mean, the worst possible outcome of pregnancy, which is, you know, by no means the Norman Rockwell picture where every pregnancy is safe and healthy and every delivery is happy and healthy. And in fact, the United States badly trails every other country in the developed world in the percentage of new moms who die, either during pregnancy or in that first year after childbirth when their health is still rather tenuous. And a new report about that says that here in the United States, of our too high rate of maternal deaths, about 8 out of 10 of them, 4 out of 5, are preventable if we just do a few things differently in our healthcare system. Personally, I think maybe having a profit motive isn't the best thing for health. And as Kristen will tell us in the interview, there are things that our politicians could do, things that our politicians in Madison should have done a long time ago that would provide better healthcare coverage for pregnant women and for new moms during that first year postpartum. So we will have that as well. If you'd like to reach the show, our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you want to get a call in, here's our phone number, 715-388-7155. Again, for those folks that have been used to calling during this time period and talking to Matt, if you didn't hear it yesterday, what with the studio being up here in Lake Wasota, Aaron's going to be screening calls from a new Up North phone number, hence the 715-388-7155. Aaron, good morning.
Good morning. And actually, if you normally listen to Pat's show or you normally would call in to Matt's show, in the interim while Matt is on sabbatical from 8 to 11, there is another show where Stu Daniels is filling in. He's just calling it Wake Up Wisconsin with Stu Daniels. And we take callers there as well. And that's the same phone number. So 715-388-7155 for either show this morning from 6 to 11.
Well, there you go, kids, all across the civic media empire, border to border, coast to coast. That's your number, 715-388-7155, for these first couple of shows of the day. And then, of course, we've got other shows up and down the civic media network, depending on the station that you're in. And you can always get the rundown of the stations and the shows at civicmedia.us. And where you see the shows, keep in mind that even if you don't have that show on your local radio station, you can still listen through the Civic Media app, listen online. Most of our shows are strung out as podcasts later on. So like a two-hour show like ours comes up with 2 podcasts per day, 1 for each hour, 3 of them for Stu from 8 to 11. This being Tuesday, 1 week till Election Day, there's something pretty important about today. If you are still holding on to an absentee ballot, this really is the day that you should get that in the mail. Now, it's not any kind of a legal deadline. And yes, the post office is pretty good about, you know, delivering things as soon as they can. But as a guideline, you want to give the Postal Service up to 7 days to get a piece of mail delivered. And it's 7 days until Election Day. So if you've been sitting on that, you got it in the mail at some point, you haven't filled it out yet, you didn't get a witness to sign the back of the envelope and put their address on that envelope, this would be the day to do that. Now, if you don't get it in the mail today, don't panic. What you can still do, the thing that I did, is still fill it out, still have a witness sign it, still seal it in the envelope. But instead of mailing it, now in this case, you go for a drive. When you're going to pick up groceries, get a haircut, whatever, go directly to your local election clerk's office and hand it to them. And I can't emphasize that enough. Hand it to them. You might even need you'll probably need an ID as well. You may see a Dropbox outside your local clerk's office. You may have even used that Dropbox before. Do not use it this year. Republicans successfully sued for no good reason whatsoever and got the right-wing justices on the state Supreme Court to declare Dropboxes illegal, at least for this year. So do not use the Dropbox. Instead, walk it into your local clerk's office. And again, if you want to mail it, you still got time today. You could even fudge with tomorrow, I guess. But for now, get that in today and otherwise walk it in. Or you can still vote in-person absentee at your local clerk's office as well. Go to myvote.wi.gov for the details. We'll take a look at sports and more headlines coming up right after this break. You are up north. Well, here we are, quarter past the hour on Tuesday, the first day of November. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and Aaron Zomers is here as well. And we appreciate you listening on civic media stations across Wisconsin, or maybe you're watching on Facebook and Twitter right now, and you're seeing my mug up on screen there. And we are happy to have you here live as well. And again, we've have plenty of other listening options for your pleasure. Drew Holiday wanted to make sure that the young and pesky Detroit Pistons wouldn't take down an NBA heavyweight for a second straight night. Holiday delivered one of those step-back jumpers that has his teammates just marveling. He hit a tie-breaking three-pointer with 45 seconds left, and the Bucks were able to beat the Pistons Monday night 110-108. Holiday finished with 25 points, 10 assists, and 7 rebounds. This means the Milwaukee Bucks are still the only remaining unbeaten team in the NBA to start the season. After beating Detroit, they are now 6-0. They did that only twice before, in 1971, 72, and 2018, 2019, and in both cases won more than 60 games by the time the season is over. It wasn't all easy, though, for the Bucks. Apparently, at one point, the team went 0-for-14 on three-point shots in the second half, but they regained their accuracy when it counted, Holiday hitting that triple with under a minute left. Now, the Pistons will stick around, and they will play the Bucks in Milwaukee again tomorrow night, and that will wrap up a 6-game homestand for the Bucks, the longest of the season in Milwaukee. Not a lot to tell you about the Packers getting set for their own game against Detroit coming up next weekend, except to say that the NFL's trading deadline is at 3:00 this afternoon. That understandably has pretty much every Wisconsin fan, you know, puckering up right now, going, ooh, what's going to happen here? Because I think when we hear trade deadline, we're going to have a little bit of PTSD after the Josh Hader thing. I know, apples and oranges, you know, Brewers to Packers, but I think we're all just a little shy right now about, are we going to pick up something here? Goodness knows the Packers could use a really good receiver. Is there one available? Or because of the team's poor start, are we actually going to find out later this afternoon that, you know, we lost somebody? Or will absolutely nothing happen, which will give everybody a reason to second guess Packer management all the way through. So we'll have to see how that goes. Aaron, yeah, you have a bold prediction on that for us?
Not really. It's just definitely one of those things that no matter what they do, everyone's going to be confused. That's usually how it goes.
Yes, that that seems to be just right. It, you know, we talk about in baseball, it's called the hot stove season, you know, as we sit around a hot stove all winter and talk about baseball trades and whatnot. It doesn't happen nearly to that extent in football. It does from time to time for certain teams, and it's just, it could be the year that we do that here, but we'll find out. Turning our attention back to the election a week from today, we mentioned last week about the difference in state laws when it comes to running elections, administering them, rules about counting the votes, also rules about voter conduct. And there are different rules from state to state about taking pictures in the voting booth, taking pictures of your ballot, taking pictures in the polling place. The rule of thumb is, you know, don't, because unless you're very crystal clear on the law, you're just going to end up making people nervous or disrupting things. But in Wisconsin, there is a rule against taking a selfie with a filled out ballot showing people how you voted. And we joked at the time that, you know, it could conceivably be a felony charge and you could get something like 3 years in prison. And we laughed. We're like, but that would never happen in Wisconsin, right? And then apparently we forgot we were dealing with Wisconsin Republicans because of what we're finding now in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel out of Ozaukee County. What was that, Aaron?
I just said, oh no, this is not good.
No, it's really not. The story comes from Dan Bice, and he talks about Paul Bazell, who is a member of the Mequon-Thiensville School Board. He is a person who fought against the recall campaign against school board members that had been, you know, prompted by, you know, phony concerns about CRT and the opposition to, you know, saving lives with COVID safeguards. Anyway, so Paul Bazell is a Mequon-Thiensville school board member. And back in April during that election, again, this is in April, so 6 months ago, during that April spring election, he posted a photo on Facebook of his completed April ballot. And now, just days ahead of the November election, he has been charged with a felony count of voter fraud, where he faces 3.5 years behind bars and $10,000 in fines. Now, we have talked to Jeffrey Mandel, who's one of the state's top election lawyers. And, you know, Dan Bice talked to him for the Journal Sentinel, and he just can't believe that this charge was even brought up. Like he said, absent evidence of actual fraud or coercion, it's not clear why a prosecutor would prioritize bringing charges under the law. But that's exactly what came from Adam Garrell, the Ozaukee County District Attorney, a Republican, who says he's using this criminal complaint against Buzzell to resolve the issue about, you know, he says it's a test case about whether, you know, this law violates the First Amendment or not. But it seems like, you know, using a cannon to go after a fly when you're charging somebody with a felony, especially somebody who may be on the other side of the political divide from you. Threatening a guy with prison time for posting a ballot photo on Facebook. Even Garrell says it's a bit much, he says. He says, personally, to Dan Bice, I agree with you that felony penalties don't fit the behavior, but a prosecutor can't choose the penalties to apply. The legislature does that. There's greater flexibility to resolve cases after they're charged when the parties might agree to a different statute to plead to for the sake of resolution. Or, hear me out on this. You could not charge the school board member with a felony for posting a photo of his ballot on Facebook. You have that discretion. Don't give me, oh, my hands are tied, I've got to. No, you can make the case that it's not worthy of the resources of your office to prosecute that case. Instead, it appears the Republican district attorney in Ozaukee County is trying to send a message a week before the election, again, meant to intimidate voters like so many other things do, by, you know, raising questions and making charges, talking about, you know, observing voters like they are in Arizona with masks and armed men near drop boxes. The funny business going on here, aimed at voter intimidation or suppression, is something that absolutely would never have been tolerated in the pre-Trump era, when elections happened, there were winners, there were losers, everything was fair, accurate, and safe. Now, elections continue to be fair, accurate, and safe, except for that whole measure of, you know, undermining democracy by spreading baseless doubts about the election to one degree or another, continuing to try to suppress voting rights, continuing to try to, you know, remove registered voters from the voting rolls. And now this, bringing a felony charge against a local school board member who was, you know, politically active last spring, 6 months later, just before the November election. It's something where I think we're going to have to reach out to Jeff Mandel and see if he would like to talk to us about this and other election laws to know about.
Yeah, it seems like I'm surprised the Republicans have a problem with this. You'd think this would be helping them with getting all their extra voting observation, the poll watchers. That this person's just trying to help out and with the poll watchers and let them see an absentee ballot too, so they can just watch more of the process.
Yeah. This is also, by the way, a Republican Party that encouraged mail-in voting year after year after year. And even as Donald Trump was trashing it and using it as a scapegoat for him just flat out losing the election, even as he was doing that, there were still Republicans saying, don't listen to him. We like when people vote by mail. There are a lot of elderly folks who tend to vote Republican. They have been voting by mail. So you had Republicans basically saying to the Trumpers out there, what are you doing? Knock it off. We have a lot of voters this way. And yet, between the talk about from Tim Michaels about getting rid of a lot of the standards that allow for mail-in voting, and of course getting rid of drop boxes in Wisconsin, you now have a class of Republicans who are doing everything possible to try to make the case that we need to turn the clock way back, and that the only votes that can be done and the only voting that matters, it's what's done until 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. on election day. Which, again, if you're able to do that, God bless you. But for everybody who's got a job that doesn't allow it, doesn't allow time off, or they're on the road, or they have family issues to deal with, or a whole host of other things, there is nothing that should prevent any eligible citizen from taking part in democracy. Voting is a right, not a responsibility, not a privilege. Voting is a right. And what leaders in this country did for decades was the right thing. And that was to expand the franchise, again, so that everybody eligible to vote, and I will say that again, so that everybody eligible to vote can vote. There are people that want to make the case that it's being made easier for ineligible people to vote, but that's not happening. It's still not happening. It wasn't happening back then, certainly not to any extent that would influence an election. And so all of this talk from Tim Michaels, from Ron Johnson about election integrity is meant to reduce the number of eligible citizens who are able to vote. And it just doesn't make sense in any way, shape, or form, except that they lost an election at the presidential level. Their leader threw a temper tantrum. They decided to go along with it in ways that led to a violent insurrection, that led to police officers being attacked and died, and that has led us to this divided place where we are now. Again, for no good reason. There's still no widespread fraud that's out there. And yet, this is where we find ourselves right now, with a reminder that you shouldn't take the ballot selfie. Fine, don't take the filled out ballot photo and put it up. But you can, in your post on Facebook or any place else, you can talk till you're blue in the face about who you voted for. I mean, look at me. That's what I'm doing right now, talking till I'm blue in the face to tell you what's happening in politics. I just won't put up, you know, a picture of my ballot because that much has gone in already. This is a good time to get that ballot returned so that you can spend election day and all the time from now till then urging other people to vote as well. We don't need the photos to let people know, you know, what our preferences are. We just need to be clear that our preferences are for democracy and for having eligible voters be able to vote here in a free country. We will take a break, have more with Dr. Kristen Lyerly coming up next. In the meantime, if you'd like our newsletter, sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. Click newsletter in the top banner. We'll be back. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back. Tuesday, November 1st. It is going to be a very nice day out. Hope you get a chance to get out and enjoy some very non-November-like weather as we start the month of November. Our next subject is a little bit heavy, but it's one that needs to be addressed. And frankly, we're going to be giving bonus points to Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes for bringing it up. And the story is about keeping women healthy during pregnancy, childbirth, and beyond. It is something, you know, near and dear to a lot of us, whether in my case, it's, you know, knowing an OBGYN and having kids. We've certainly talked to Kristen Lyerly in the past about her work with moms and babies, but also to people like Congresswoman Gwen Moore, Senator Tammy Baldwin, and others who have looked for ways to keep moms healthy. And the reason for that, if you missed it at the top of the hour, is not only because it's important on its own, but because the United States has terrible numbers in terms of maternal mortality, the number of women who die in pregnancy, childbirth, and for a year after pregnancy, when again, a woman's body is, you know, not completely back to what it was pre-pregnancy. And then there are a host of other factors relating to mental health, substance use, finances, a host of other things that can take a toll on a woman's life. Maternal mortality in this country is nearly three times higher. The rate is nearly three times higher than the next highest country on the list of maternal deaths. And that rate is even higher among Black women in communities of color. It is something that's been talked about, but rather behind the scenes for quite some time. And while Congresswoman Moore and Senator Baldwin and others have put forward some proposals that would help improve healthcare coverage for women, both pregnant and postpartum, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who's running for U.S. Senate, has also put out a specific plan that embraces a lot of what Gwen Moore and Tammy Baldwin want to do. So we wanted to talk to Dr. Kristen Lyerly about that. And about that time, the other shoe dropped, and that was a new report that said of the women who die in the United States during pregnancy, childbirth, and postpartum, about 83% of those deaths are preventable. There are things that could have been done that would have saved their lives. And so we wanted to ask Kristen more about that. So we talked to her very recently. Let's play back what she had to say about this important issue. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, good to talk to you again.
Always good to talk with you, Pat.
Now, this is just one of those subjects that is heartbreaking. And it doesn't get nearly the attention it should, given where the U.S. ranks among the developed world. But this report that says maybe 84% of U.S. maternal deaths are preventable has got to hit people like a gut punch, not just those who never hear it, but even people in your field to know that so many times these are deaths that didn't have to happen.
It's true. Here we are in the wealthiest country on earth with the most expensive healthcare system in the world. And we have the worst maternal mortality rate of any developed country. And this is not a new thing. In 2018, 658 moms died as a result of their pregnancy. In 2021, these numbers just came out, 1,178 moms died. That's 3 years, and it has almost doubled. This is absolutely unacceptable.
There's this focus on what's called the fourth trimester of pregnancy, because, well, let's take care of something first. When people hear these maternal death numbers, and then they hear that it actually isn't just, you know, from conception to childbirth, it actually is for a year beyond that. And somebody mm-hmm. might be thinking, well, what's that got to do with maternal mortality? Tell us why that's important to look at this well into the first year, otherwise known as the fourth and the fourth trimester.
Well, when you have a baby, that's not it for your body. It takes your body a year to recover from a pregnancy. And we know that a lot of the pregnancy complications, the cardiac issues, the mental health issues, they actually worsen in the postpartum period. Over 50% of moms die after they have had the baby. And that's a time when a lot of moms lose access to healthcare, which is the number one thing that we can do to prevent deaths related to pregnancy.
And that's because, as the study authors say, the typical 6-week postnatal checkup that all of us are familiar with is actually way too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is too late. There's been a big push amongst OBGYN doctors to have patients come back at 2 weeks. And if people have certain medical conditions, we have them come back sooner than that for follow-up. But even at 6 weeks, there are a lot of people who have complicating factors, or they've lost access to care, they don't have the funds, and they don't come back for their follow-up. And it's often these moms who die, leaving their families without a mom and their other kids without a mom.
What is it about Medicaid expansion, known as Badger Care here in Wisconsin, that could be done differently to try to make a difference?
So Medicaid expansion is the giant thing that we should have done back when we first adopted Obamacare. And that would have given coverage to over 100,000 people. I think the latest estimate is 120,000 more Wisconsinites would receive care if we had expanded Medicaid. It wouldn't have cost us anything here in the state. That's federal money that we actually pay into and get back from the federal government. But we refused it, based on politics. So we've been living like this for many, many years. What we've been pushing for as an OBGYN community, taking care of our moms and our babies, is Medicaid extension, postpartum extension. We want these moms who have Medicaid, and that's about 50% of the births in this state are covered by Medicaid. We want these moms to be taken care of for that full year after they have the baby. And then, if they do have a complication, they will have access, they will have insurance, so they will be able to receive care.
It was noted in the National Public Radio story about this, that we are so baby focused, one of the authors says. Once the baby is here, it's almost like the mother is discarded like a Reese's peanut butter cup. The mom is the wrapper, the baby is the candy. Once you remove the wrapper, you just discard the wrapper. And what we really need to be thinking about is that fourth trimester, the time after the baby is born, on things like, you know, mental health, depression, substance use, all of these things that, again, aren't getting the attention they deserve.
Mm-hmm. Cardiac issues, that's another huge one. Hypertension, blood pressure problems. There are so many things, so many complications that can occur during pregnancy. And pregnancy is like a stress test for a woman's body. If it's going to happen at some point in your life, it's probably going to be revealed during your pregnancy. And it doesn't go away at the time of birth. It can be exacerbated, and it can actually worsen in the postpartum period.
Now, let's talk about how this will change because of the Dobbs decision that, you know, stripped away so much of women's health rights, and whether what's happening in states across the country, Wisconsin included, does that threaten to make these maternal mortality rates even higher?
Yes, unfortunately. Some work has been done that has shown that our maternal mortality rates could increase rapidly by as much as 25%. It's shocking. But when people are forced to carry pregnancies that they aren't prepared to carry physically, psychologically, financially, pregnancy is not a joyful experience for everyone. Pregnancy is a medically challenging, difficult experience for many women, and more moms will die as a result of this.
It's not something that comes up in campaigns almost at all. And yet Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes has actually put forward a plan to address the Black maternal mortality crisis, because the numbers are so much higher in communities of color. Mm-hmm. And they include supporting Representative Congresswoman Gwen Moore's Mama's Act to reduce rising maternal and infant mortality rates, joining Senator Baldwin and co-sponsoring the Black Maternal Health Momnibus Act to focus on social investments to support maternal health conditions, and to fully expand Medicaid and adopt 12 months of postpartum care. What's the significance of a major candidate in a statewide race elevating this issue?
These are all issues that we have been working for on a federal level for many years. And Congresswoman Moore and Senator Baldwin have been champions of the Momnibus Act and of the Mamas Act. And by the way, a mom in Wisconsin, a Black mom, is 5 times more likely to die related to pregnancy than a white mom. But these interventions will help all moms. So I'm not at all surprised that future Senator Barnes is taking the baton and running with these essential acts that preserve life of the mom, preserve life of the baby, and make our communities and our families stronger.
One last question, and that is, not to take anything off of the policymakers or the healthcare community, but if we're talking only to moms and the people who love them as they go through pregnancy and beyond, what are the things that all of us need to be more aware of that can help reduce that risk of something catastrophic happening to mom?
Yeah, mental health is a huge thing. Supporting each other, listening to each other, taking care of each other, making sure that our pregnant people can get to their appointments, that we help with childcare, that they've got food. There are so many things that we can do as a community as we're taking care of each other that make a huge difference in families and in communities in general. Everyone can pitch in, Pat.
Did I miss any other points that you wanted to raise up as well?
It has been a giant initiative from the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists to install maternal mortality review committees in every state. These are groups of people, doctors, social workers, everybody who is involved with taking care of moms and babies. They meet on a regular basis and they investigate any maternal death in the state, looking for things that they can do to prevent future deaths. This is where this number came from, the CDC report of 84% of deaths being preventable. Maternal mortality review data is being suppressed in states like Texas, where politicians, Republican politicians, don't want this information to be released to the public. So they're not allowing state agencies to release it until after the election. And as physicians, it is unconscionable. I don't understand how our leaders who are supposed to be representing us and helping us are causing this kind of a roadblock as we are trying to take care of our moms and babies.
Kristen, thank you so much for your time on this. We really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Again, our thanks to Kristen Lyerly for doing that with us very recently so we could play that back for you this morning. Again, the main takeaway from that is if you want to save lives and have fewer moms, Wisconsin moms, Black moms, moms across the country, have fewer of them die, that one of the easiest things to do in Wisconsin is to make sure that they can see a doctor, to make and see a doctor as needed, not as they can afford it. And the easiest way to do that is to properly expand Medicaid, known as Badger Care here, to cover new moms up to 1 year from after having the baby, which is not the case now. Expanding Medicaid in Wisconsin is something that could have been done years and years ago. But because it was attached to the Affordable Care Act, and because, again, we have a political class in this country that is dedicated only to temper tantrums rather than ideas, Wisconsin Republicans have prevented Medicaid from being expanded, and as a result, it continues to cost Wisconsin taxpayers perhaps $1 billion and counting in terms of lost federal funding in many cases that taxpayers had to make up in order to have what coverage is out there right now from BadgerCare. This is something that Governor Evers has asked for in budgets and has asked for in special sessions of the legislature. There is nothing partisan about providing ample health care that saves lives, that prevents moms from dying. It is something well overdue, and every Republican legislator who has opposed it is responsible for this high rate. We'll wrap up this hour's conversation in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlaw. On this Tuesday morning in music history, for November 1st, it was November 1st, 1969, that the Beatles scored their 13th number one album in the U.S. The album was Abbey Road. And of course, this is something from there. It was mostly recorded in April, July, August of 1969. It was the last album that the group started recording together, although Let It Be was the last album they completed before their breakup the following year in 1970. In 1975, Elton John was the king of the pop charts, and that included the single Island Girl that hit number one and stayed there for 3 weeks on this week in 1975. However, because of its lyrics and story behind it, Elton John has not performed the song in more than 30 years, and so old time radio is pretty much the only place where you're going to hear Island Girl anymore. On this day in 1980, Bruce Springsteen had his very first number one album. That was The River, which featured the number five hit, Hungry Heart. A lot of it was recorded in 1977, tracks that included Independence Day, Point Blank, The Ties That Bind, Ramrod, and Sherry Darling, things that he had done on tour in 1978, but then finally put on an album in 1980. Birthdays today. Just one of note here, Tim Cook, the successor to Steve Jobs as CEO of Apple, is 62 years old today. On this day in 1512, the Sistine Chapel, painted by Michelangelo, was finally unveiled to the public. And as somebody who has seen it, I would just say worth it. You get a chance, yeah, go take a look. And one more birthday today, Anthony Kiedis, the lead singer of Red Hot Chili Peppers, singing Under the Bridge here, turns 60 years old, born on this day, November 1st in 1962. Taking a look at what's at Up North News this week, some of the new stories that are up there. One of our freelance writers, Jessica Lee, has updated the 9 roadside attractions across Wisconsin worth making a stop for. We've talked about some of these previous versions of these stories. Some are pretty easy to guess. If I were to say, you know, roadside attractions that you would stop for, it may not be your destination, but if you know it's there, you're going to stop along the way. Actually, maybe we'll try a pop quiz with Aaron. What do you say we do this first? Aaron, is there something along a roadside attraction of note, you know, kind of like your biggest ball of twine or something like that, that comes to mind when you think of Wisconsin roadside attractions?
There's a few things that I always drive past and they're pretty neat. Like there's the, I don't remember the exact name, but there's like the Cheese Castle.
Oh, is that the Mars one?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yep.
There's that, yeah. And there's this, whenever I drive up north to like the Rhinelander area, there's this big barn that's painted like a pig, and it's just huge and pink, and it's obviously not a big attraction, but it's fun to look at.
No, it is. You know, it's kind of like the Smiley Barn there in Waukesha County. Let's see. Well, of course, in Rhinelander, there's Hodags. But in this particular article from Jessica, she starts with, again, if you're anywhere near La Crosse, yeah, obviously think of the six pack, which is, you know, just six of these 54-foot tall storage tanks at the former G. Heilman Brewery in La Crosse, painted to look like a six pack of old style. Others of you who live farther north are saying, Hayward, hello. Yeah, that would be the world's largest freshwater fish. That, of course, would be the, you know, the big muskie on display, 143 feet long, 41 feet tall. And if you've never been in it, yeah, you can go in it. You can climb inside of it. And then the muskie's open mouth is where the balcony is. And of course, is a, you know, fantastic place for the mandatory photo while you're traveling up north. There is
a filled out ballot with you.
Pardon me?
As long as you don't have a filled out ballot with you.
Yes. As long as the ballot's not filled out and you're taking a picture, you know, somebody down on the ground is like, you'd really have to zoom in. But, you know, if the Sawyer County DA is anything like the Ozaukee County DA, yep, careful. Felony voter fraud charges could be filed against you. Over in Sparta, there is the Ben Bikin structure, a 32-foot high Victorian era penny farthing bicycle. You can't leave out Wisconsin Dells, where you would find the world's largest Sinclair dinosaur. And, you know, Sinclair stations, not as prevalent as they used to be, but you still see some from time to time. When I have to drive across North Dakota and Montana to visit family in Idaho, there are a couple of Sinclair stations that have, you know, the big fiberglass dinosaurs that the kids like to ride on. You feel like you're in an episode of the Flintstones when you see that. We've spoken before about the Sputnik crash site that, you know, my wife is from the Manitowoc area.
And I'm from Manitowoc.
What's that?
I'm from Manitowoc. So I was going to bring that one up too. I was thinking about it. So
have you been there? Have you spent time? Is it like a pilgrimage or?
Kind of. Every year we have Sputnik Fest in Manitowoc, mm-hmm. where everyone dresses up in funky alien costumes and there's contests and art projects and inflatable aliens and all kinds of funky stuff. Really, it's just a ring in the ground that's maybe like this big, but it's still cool historically.
Yeah, it basically just when Sputnik 4, which was one of the first satellites, launched in 1960, when it came back to Earth in 1962, when it fell out of orbit and broke up, a small piece landed in downtown Manitowoc and created a 3-inch hole in the pavement. And in Manitowoc, that's all you need for a street festival. So yes, there were festivities since, although, like I said, my wife from the area had never heard of any of it. And of course, her excuse being, we were on a farm, we were doing work. We don't have time for, you know, the celebrations of a crashed, you know, piece up, not the whole satellite, just a piece of a satellite. There's the Claire de Lune in Mercer. It's a 2,000-pound sculpture that stands 16 feet tall. Pretty nice singing voice for a loon. There's the world's largest penny in Woodruff. And when I was up in the Manitowoc Woodruff area, that's when I first heard the story behind the penny. And it's actually quite fascinating. The area didn't have a hospital many, many years ago. And a doctor up there in the early 1950s, Dr. Kate Pelham Newcomb, started a fundraising effort to build a hospital. She was known as the Angel on Snowshoes because she would snowshoe as far away as need be to bring medical care to somebody if necessary. So in trying a fundraising effort to build a hospital, she encouraged local school children to save their pennies. And the fundraiser spread across the country. It was a viral moment of 1953. And eventually, Dr. Kate was brought on national TV to be thanked for her fundraising efforts. And eventually, kids sent in 1.7 million pennies in order to build this hospital. And there is now a 15-foot high, 12-inch thick penny that was dedicated in 1954 to commemorate the students whose perseverance and commitment to fundraising helped the community. So those are just a few of the attractions that you might find as you're traveling around Wisconsin. And you can also find that story and so much more, of course, at our website, upnorthnewswi.com. We will talk more in our 7 o'clock hour with Hans Breitenmoser about rural issues across Wisconsin too. And we'll have some more of the day's headlines. First, this top of the hour break for news and weather, and we'll be back. This is Up North News Radio.